capital, Kampala. The resurgence of M23 rebels in the Democratic Republic of Congo has forced several thousand people to leave their villages. Others have had to stay despite the suffering they have endured a few days after the withdrawal of the rebels. For VOA, Zanem Neti Zaidi went to some of the residents and has this report from Goma.
Zirabakurikiza Jean Ehere Drosse lives in the city of Bunagana in Ruchuru territory. He is grateful for the gradual return of peace after the area was taken over by Ugandan troops, which are part of the forces of the East African Community. However, he deplores the fact that he no longer receives any clients because so many have been displaced by war. He says since the beginning of the displacement here, business has slowed down. Before, they had a large number of clients, ranging from 20 to 25 people. But today, they only receive 5 people per week. Since the deployment of the EAC regional force in Ruchuru and Nyiragongo territories, the security situation has started to change. The Goma-Ruchuru road, which is under the control of Kenyan forces, has been reopened. Bimenyimana Gregoire, a member of civil society, acknowledges the efforts of the regional EAC force, but deplores that some areas are still under rebel control.
La vie est purement médiocre.
He says living conditions are bad. As motorcyclists, they have taxes imposed on them by the M23. They are not able to leave Ruchuru for Goma and vice versa because of activities is paralyzed. For its part, the East African force pursues its mission of bringing peace to all areas under its control.
Mimi natimiza kama professional force.
He says he does his job as part of a professional force. He makes sure that he achieves the goals of collaborating with his colleagues in the National Army and establishing a process to support the work of humanitarian agencies. He is also working to assure the mobilization, disarmament, and integration of rebel troops back into the community. According to the UN Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, 7,000 Congolese have taken refuge in neighboring Uganda. For VOA Africa, Amzani Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
United States President Joe Biden announced that U.S. military extracted U.S. government personnel from Khartoum and suspended its operations in the country as fighting between Sudan armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces entered its ninth day. Biden said Sudan's tragic violence has already cost the lives of hundreds of innocent civilians and must stop. The statement further says the belligerent parties must implement an immediate and unconditional ceasefire, allow unhindered humanitarian access, and respect the will of the people of Sudan. For more on what the move means for Sudan and the current conflict, my colleague Nabil Biagio reached Salman Salman. She is a Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association.
What this means is that the U.S. no longer sees Sudan as being safe for its government officials. Initially, the U.S. and other countries had tried to bring the two warring parties to the negotiating table and to have them agree to some sort of ceasefire. Unfortunately, after three attempted ceasefires and none holding for more than about an hour or two, the U.S. Officials probably now see that Sudan is going into a long and protracted war with more violence. I think one of the key indicators that this war is going to become more violent and not going to end before either Burhan or Hemeti defeats the other is the fact that in several interviews you've seen the persistent Hemeti calling for Burhan's head and saying that the war will only end if they're able to capture Burhan and have his head. At the same time, Burhan was asked by a news reporter, by a television reporter, whether the prospect of U.S. sanctions would deter him from continued violence. And he said that he would continue to fight and that he would accept any consequences continued fighting would entail, including U.S. sanctions, and that he believes that fighting to free Sudan from the RSF was more important than any sanctions that any country could impose on Sudan.
Yes, so we're seeing more belligerence from the warring parties and not much willingness to give peace a chance, basically. And speaking of ceasefires, today, Sunday, is the end of a three-day ceasefire between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces, a ceasefire that didn't seem to hold anyway. And families I speak with in Khartoum have been leaving the capital to other places, and many are leaving the country altogether. Are we entering a bloodier episode of this brutal conflict?
Oh, absolutely. You're seeing we're now entering the 10th day of this war, and reports are that 400 or more people have been killed. So you're seeing continued bloody violence. My own sources, my own family, relatives have told me that every day buses of Sudanese leave Sudan and cross the northern border through to Egypt. There are also people who are crossing the border into neighboring Chad, despite the Chad border being closed. I mean, we have reports that more than 20,000 people, Sudanese, have entered Chad. Thousands have entered Egypt, and thousands have left their homes in the center of Khartoum to safer zones of Khartoum 10, 15 miles out. So, for example, you know, we have maybe there are so many people who have left, for example, Khartoum 2 and Amarat, which is a part of the center of the fighting, to go to inhabit their relatives' houses in Omdurman, which is a district outside of the center of Khartoum. We're looking at, you know, now a situation where the fighting has escalated and continues to escalate between Burhan and Hemeti.
And what hope is there then for stopping this war?
You know, I mean, this is a really difficult question. The international community has been putting pressure on both Burhan and Hemeti to at least create some humanitarian corridors. And even the basic, I mean, request for humanitarian corridors from Antonio Guterres of the UN, similar calls from the AU, IGAD, leaders from neighboring countries, from the Quad, from the Triad, none of these calls have been heeded or respected. So we're seeing the violence and the aggression that has just been, looks like two egos battling for victory. So we don't see, unfortunately and sadly, we don't see an end to this conflict anytime soon.
Salma Salman is a Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. state of Virginia. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Riyad Mahrez scored the hat-trick in an FA Cup semi-final since 1958, as Manchester City kept their quest for the treble on course by outclassing Sheffield United at Wembley. The Algerian opened the scoring after Daniel Jebinson fouled Bernardo Silva before taking advantage of a wide-open Sheffield United defence to score the second with a solo effort just after the hour. Mahrez then got his third, the first in the semi-final in this competition since Alex Dawson achieved defeat for Manchester United in 1958.
Really good game. You know, we're really happy to have won here at 3-0 and to go to the final, because like the last 3 years we came here in the semi-final and we always lost, you know. So we really wanted to make sure that today we put a good performance and we win to go to the final. And we're really happy, yeah.
Staying in England, Egyptian forward Mohamed Salah scored the winner as Liverpool won a 5-goal thriller against Nottingham Forest at Anfield to boost their hopes of claiming an unlikely Champions League place. After a drab opening half, the second half was an end-to-end classic as relegation threatened Forest twice levelled up. Salah netted his 16th Premier League goal of the season to put Jurgen Klopp's side in pole position for a top-4 finish. And now to the CAF Champions League, where Egyptian giant Al Ahly kept their chase for a record-extending 11th title alive with a 2-0 victory over Raja Club Athletic in the first leg of the CAF Champions League quarterfinal on Saturday night. Mohamed Abdulhamen and Hamdi Fatih were on target in either half in Cairo to give their side an early advantage heading into next weekend's return fixture in Casablanca. In old years, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa laid down a marker on their ambition for a second continental title after earning a massive 4-1 away victory over Algeria's CR Belouizdad, while Simba SC of Tanzania picked a 1-0 win at home on Saturday, earning a slim advantage over defending champions Wydad Athletic Club in Dar es Salaam. Another away victory was recorded in Algeria in a North African derby as Tunisia's Osporans drew first blood in the quarterfinal of the CAF Champions League against Algeria's JS Kabylie, winning 1-0 away from home to earn a precious first leg advantage. And now to netball. President of the Uganda Netball Federation, Sarah Babirye, has been suspended from office for a period of 3 months by that country's Minister of Sports. At the center of the row are issues bordering on governance, accountability of funds and general management of the Uganda Netball Federation. The minister's directive also placed Brigadier General Flava Beyakwaso as the interim president of the federation, which is currently preparing the she cranes of Uganda for the Netball World Championships. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. A week ago, fierce fighting broke out in the Sudan. The opposing groups were two armies. One, the National Army. The second, a paramilitary group called the Rapid Support Force. The chiefs of these two opposing armies began their trade in Darfur under the presidency of al-Bashir, where a brutal war was fought against the people that alarmed the international community. And when al-Bashir was ousted, the two men became prominent in Khartoum. They also play a role in the ousting of the civilian government with military support in Sudan. The army removed that group, and the head of the army became the chief, and the chief of the paramilitary force became his deputy. They have always worked closely, so it was a surprise to discover that they are competing with each other. Recently, it became known that the two men could not agree on the timing of the joining of the paramilitary force with the army. The head of the army wants 2 years, and that of the paramilitary wants 10 years. What is now surprising also is that these two men are really fighting a war to the finish, a zero-sum game. And both feel terrible about each other. is bordering on total air trade, according to their own words. Now, it has become difficult for the international community to secure ceasefire. Condemnations have been made of the fighting, ceasefires have been called, ceasefires have been arranged, and have not been fulfilled. Even the truce that was agreed to for the Eid celebration for 3 days soon collapsed. So you have a situation where the main victims are the civilian population who are scrambling for food, for shelter, and for electricity. So this is a very terrible situation, and there seems to be no end in sight. This situation in Sudan is reminiscent of what happened in Somalia 30 years ago, following the ousting of the long-serving president in Somalia. Total chaos descended on the country. The brutal fighting in the country, the destruction, forced the international community to withdraw completely from the country. This became so bad that the former deputy foreign minister of Egypt, Boutros Ghali, lamented that the rich world was focusing its attention on the war in the Balkans, while ignoring the bitter war in a poor country. It is therefore not surprising that his first act as Secretary General was to appoint an envoy with the full support of the Security Council to offer his good offices to the leaders who are fighting in Somalia. The position of the envoy was strengthened when other representatives of the then Organization of African Unity, the League of Arab States, and the Organization of Islamic Countries joined that envoy, and they were able to start negotiations to secure the forced ceasefire and help to nurse a failed state to the present state today, with UN peacekeeping being installed. So even though today is a functioning state in Somalia, democracy has not been restored, and there are constant attacks by Al-Shabaab. This would indicate that what is required now is concerted efforts to enhance the role of the Secretary General, making his good offices effective with strong Security Council support. This will give to him a tool that could enable him to do it. Of course, good offices requires that both sides accept it. And if it becomes possible, this will enable it to drastically reduce the competing initiatives for recognition as the main negotiator. Surely, the world recognizes, and the party should recognize, that a zero-sum game to end all fighting in the Sudan is unwarranted. Thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Loving like I just don't care. I'm so sorry, 'cause you be on a long thing.
Banuti. Yeah, my calling them, I know where we are. We are having fun all night. We are chilling, chilling, doing the city. Yeah, having fun all night. We are dancing, chilling, doing the city. Yeah. Okay.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a goat that dies in the barn was never killed by hunger. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.